standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real.
You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Remember back in January, President Trump said, and it was very clear, very direct, we're going to have insurance for everybody. He said there was a philosophy in some circles that if you can't pay for it, you don't get it. That's not going to happen with us, he said. You may also remember back in 2015, he told 60 Minutes, everybody's got to be covered. Well, according to the White House mouthpiece, Sean Spicer, the president really meant, everybody's going to have choice to get it. You'll have the opportunity. You'll have the chance. You'll have choice. Not everyone's going to be covered, evidently, now moving forward, now that we've seen the new Republican plan. Here, talk a little bit about this and whatever else we can bang around our good friend, attorney Irwin Aronson. Irwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Good to be here.
So not everybody's going to be covered, I guess. We'll have choice. You'll have the choice to pick off the McDonald's dollar menu of insurance in the future. That'll be great, won't it?
Oh, it is just going to be fantastic. I'm sure that it will be huge, but it will not do anything to help people who need it. Anybody particularly who's in the age range of about 45 to 64 is going to, unless they're multi-billionaires like Trump's buddies, are going to discover that they get less coverage for a lot more money with a smaller subsidy. And this is something our listeners should really get an opportunity to take some time if they have access to a computer and take a look at. The Kaiser Family Foundation, KFF, has created an interactive map of the United States, county by county. You can go on that interactive map and plug in an age and an earned income level, a salary level or wage level, and it will do an immediate comparison of what you presently are eligible for under the Affordable Care Act and what you would be eligible for under the Trumpistan law. And some of those results are breathtaking, particularly among low-wage earners who, instead of having a choice about whether they want a bronze plan or a silver plan or a gold plan, will have a choice to either die or die.
Yeah.
The Congressional Budget Office analysis that apparently the Trump people didn't, like in advance of its being published, is spot on, quite frankly. But this Kaiser Family Foundation website is breathtaking in its scope and its accessibility and user-friendliness. So
yeah.
I commend that to all of our readers.
Something to absolutely take a look at. But you look at the CBO report where they point out someone 64 years old making $26,000 a year currently gets like $13,800 in a subsidy under the Trump Care plan. You're going to end up with $4,900, the same that someone making $90,000 a year would get. And you go, wait a second, how is there any fairness in that? And look, this isn't about fairness. This is about pay or die insurance, and that's where we're heading to.
Well, it's not only where we're heading to, but let's take the example you just used and carry it out the rest of the way. At the same time that particular individual's assistance for access to health care is cut by two-thirds, the same piece of legislation that the Trump-Ryan cabal is promoting would also permit the insurance companies to increase the insurance premium by 500%,
yep,
five times, in comparison to what they charge somebody who's a little bit younger. So what we really have is not only a dramatic slash of accessibility because of the amount of money that the government will provide to assure that the rest of us taxpayers and insured ratepayers don't have to pay that bill, would be a rate increase and the cost of delivering less insurance of dramatic, breathtaking proportions. And this is all under the guise of making this accessible and affordable. And at the same time, on the other end of the spectrum, Trump's billion-dollar buddies will find that they have tax incentives and credits worth literally hundreds of thousands of dollars a year if this were to pass. So who's kidding who here? This is Robin Hood in reverse, and it can't be honestly described any other way. We're stealing from the rich. We're stealing from the poor to give to the rich.
But are we surprised by any of this, Irwin? I mean, you know, when I look at this plan, it's exactly what I was expecting. You're going to attack Medicaid, which they do. You're going to give huge amounts of money to the very wealthy, which they do. You're going to have death panels by restricting access to insurance and thus care, which they do. And again, it's all about their rhetoric and their actions. Worlds apart, but in looking at this, I'm not surprised by any of it.
Well, I'm surprised at the brazenness of it, and I'm also surprised at something else. Paul Ryan was the object of lacerating attacks by Donald Trump during the campaign, during that period of time when it was appropriate for him to criticize the Washington insiders like Paul Ryan. So I thought maybe, just once, maybe we mere citizens, you know, the people who have the highest office in the land, could rely on something that the then soon to be now occupant of the White House was saying, that there could at least once be a shred of truth to this. But it turns out that this guy is this century's reincarnation of Huey Long, the kingfish, and, you know, maybe Marie Antoinette, let him eat cake. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's going on here, but we have reached a time when, you know, Trump is lying about serious, significant public policy that affects people in their homes, in their children's schools, at their workplaces, and does so in the most cynical of fashions, and we know he's lying because his lips are moving. That is frightening. That is frightening not merely at the basic individual pieces of public policy levels of which we speak now, but it's frightening for its parallels of Europe in the 1930s. It's frightening for its parallels of days that are very troublesome in American history, days of Father Coughlin and days of Joseph McCarthy. And we season that with an assault on our access to information, the media, and all of a sudden we find there is not merely a change of occupants in our government, there is a wholesale attack on our form of government. This is not simply health care that's at issue or workers' rights that are at issue or our children's access to a meaningful, equalizing public education that's at issue. Our democracy is at issue. And I can't overstate that.
No, I know it's everything all in the same ball of wax. Let me ask you about the health care bill, because you know it's an interesting dynamic, as you pointed out, between Paul Ryan and Donald Trump, and the fact that Trump would sign on wholeheartedly 100% behind a Ryan plan just seems strange to me at the moment. Do you think he read it?
I don't know that he read it or that he even had somebody read it to him. This is not a guy who has evidenced any real commitment to or desire to learn details. This is a guy who says you're with me or against me, and I'll decide that after the fact once I decide what being with me means. So it's under the best of circumstances, a moving target. And I can't imagine that he read anything other than how it's going to help him and maybe his kids.
But I do find it interesting that he doesn't want to slap his name on it because, look, you know, he slapped his name on bad meat, on terrible alcohol. He slapped his name on, you know, Chinese-made clothing.
And yeah, putrid alcohol, yeah. So it's you know, as has been the case throughout his career, he'll stand back a little bit and slap his name on it if it's successful and slap somebody down with it if it's not successful. That's his way. Look, this is not merely somebody like me suggesting there are problems with this proposal. His allies in the Senate, many of his allies in the House, have openly and notoriously assaulted this.
Yeah, Tom Cotton.
You know, don't just have folks like us attacking this. We have all manner of U.S. senators of the Republican Party who have said it's dead on arrival, who have said they won't vote for it in this fashion, who have said that it's too liberal, they've said it's too conservative, they said it's Obamacare light. They have said any number of things, and this is a death spiral for all kinds of people, but it is a foundational betrayal of the people that Donald Trump induced to vote for him by saying this wasn't going to be business as usual. The fact of the matter is, he was honest when he said it wasn't going to be business as usual, but he didn't say the rest of it, that this was going to be, instead of being a government of the people, by the people, for the people, there was going to be a government that assaults the people every day in every way for the benefit of his big business buddies.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because you've made the frame that a couple people have thrown out, that the Republicans are, you know, are coming forward and they're saying that this is bad and we can't have this. I argue that many of those Republicans who are coming forward and saying this is horrible, and it is, believe that the horrible stuff doesn't go far enough, that that they believe any intrusion by government into the private sector is a bad thing, and that this doesn't put enough people out of insurance, and this doesn't gut Medicaid enough or do enough to get tax dollars out of it.
I think that that's a fair and reasonable analysis from what I've read in various honest and integrity-based media sources, but also in the lacking in integrity media sources. You know, Breitbart is assaulting this plan. So, I think that there is a strain of the controlling political party that is confused about how our government operates effectively. Former President Eisenhower was the person who analyzed this best in a very simple analogy. He spoke of this as a highway, and there is no safety or security for riding on the berm on the left side of the road or riding on the berm of the right side of the road. What makes it is riding in the center, the part where it was made to travel on. And these people can't find themselves on the center at all. There are practical realities of how insurance concepts work. The reason that Medicare is not merely successful, but is a program that the least economically comfortable and the most economically comfortable among us would argue equally passionately to protect and to secure, and that is because, A, it takes the idea of profit out of other people's pain. B, it is universal access. And C, it is controlled by something over which we do have some voice in periodic election cycles. The idea, the insane idea, that things that are necessary, that society can't provide for itself, somehow must not be provided by any unit of government. And further, that there is some freedom and market-based notions behind the delivery of health care is insane. When someone has cancer, when someone has a heart attack, when someone is being blessed with a new baby, there's not a period of time during which you can negotiate over price. There's not a period of time when you have an opportunity to negotiate over access. So there are some things that government can really deliver better than markets, and that is the true downfall, if there is one, of the Affordable Care Act, commonly referred to as Obamacare, because in order to get votes, the insurance lobby was so effective that they caused you and us to basically pay for premiums for 30 million or so people that were previously uninsured. And that lined their pockets. It didn't really limit or restrict what they could make. And so they get the benefit of making money, of profiting out of people's pain. So the real answer to whatever problems exist with the current iteration of the Affordable Care Act is not about too much Medicaid, not about too liberal a subsidy, not about inappropriate financing methods. The real problem is that we continue to have a system that allows insurers to make a profit out of other people's pain. It is interesting to see how rapidly who signed up for what side of this Ryan legislation. The American Hospital Association opposes it. The American Medical Association opposes it. The American Association of Retired Persons opposes it. The AFL-CIO opposes it. Who's for it? Well, the American Association of Health Insurers is for it. Isn't that interesting?
Not surprising.
Isn't that interesting?
Not surprising at all.
So what we have in the end is, instead of a government-mandated health insurance system that some people may not like, is we have a private industry for profit mandating a different health care access system that is heads they win, tails we lose.
Which is why, again, you see all of this resistance going on across the country, because I think people get it. I think people are waking up to the reality that at least what we have, as bad as the ACA is, we should be improving that, not tearing it away. As someone who's a single-payer guy, I wanted to see at the minimum a public option. That didn't happen. Hopefully we could have gotten that. I'm just not seeing what's coming out of this. Let me ask you on a different line on this, though. You know, there's part of me that says none of this was ever meant to pass, that there was never going to be a replacement. It was all about destroying the ACA and taking down the Obamacare. And they've already done, I think, enough to do it by stripping out all of the funding out of it.
I think that that's a fair assessment and reasonably accurate. I would take a different tack, I think. It goes like this. This cabal of people has spent 8 years campaigning against something, knowing full well that when Obama was in office, if they would repeal it, he would veto it. So it was very safe to just call it names in the same way, by the way, that in another age, in another era in this country, those who opposed Medicare did. And in yet another age, those who opposed the Social Security system did. The difference, of course, is something that was never supposed to happen in their minds, not ours, in their minds, happened. And that was they got control of the White House, they got control of the United States House of Representatives, and they got control of the United States Senate. So now, not 90%, not 80%, but 100% of control of the calendar, of the agenda, of the way in which this will be addressed is in the hands of the very people who had been advocating repeal not for the last 2 months, but for the last 7+ years, nearly 8 years.
Yeah.
And it was always safe for them to do as long as they weren't in control of everything. But now they're in control of everything, and despite the fact that they had 8 years to suggest something, they are bankrupt at suggesting something. They can only suggest nothing. And while they're busily suggesting nothing, they have their palms up to collect campaign contributions in their coffers directly from the insurers and others of like mind. And the billionaires who get a bonus out of this, it's not just that they don't have to pay as much, they actually get huge tax credits in what's proposed. So they get to collect campaign contributions, and they also get to have what I've now come to refer to on this show and other places as the Citizens United effect, the Citizens United case that allows those who profit from this to make so-called independent political expenditures without reporting, under cover of darkness, hiding who they are and what they're doing, to support the Pat Toomeys of the world. And meanwhile, we're trying to find Pat Toomey, and maybe we can find him on the side of a milk carton.
No, I wouldn't bet on that either.
You know, among the missing.
Yeah, he's completely missing, and probably be missing from the milk carton. But here's the thing: you point out the amount of money going to the wealthy, almost $1 billion in $800 billion in tax cuts to the richest 2% in this country, almost $1 trillion.
Yeah, for the people who pay dramatically less than their fair share as well. I mean, this is targeted legislation. If you look at that Kaiser Family Foundation report in close detail, you see that the top 0.1% gets like 70% of all of the money, and something in excess of 90% of Americans pay the bill for it.
It's nuts.
They'll be paying for the wealthy to have access to health insurance while not being able to have access on their own.
Now, on the flip side of that, the almost $1 trillion that we're handing to the top 1% or top 2%, we're taking from people at the bottom by gutting Medicaid by almost $1 trillion as well.
Yeah, and I think that we need to be honest about this at a whole other level. We here in Pennsylvania, because Governor Wolf, in a very enlightened and pro-Pennsylvania fashion, engaged in that Medicaid expansion just after former Governor Corbett refused to. And that has brought hundreds of millions of dollars into Pennsylvania's economy that is paying to employ thousands and thousands of people. We will be losing in Pennsylvania upwards of $500 million a year when this Medicaid change, as it's proposed, comes online, if indeed it comes online. And that's real money in real health care, real jobs that sustain families with family-sustaining wages and family-sustaining benefits. And that is part of what members of our congressional delegation, what our two United States senators are being asked to approve in this Ryan Trump plan.
So last question
I've got for you. And I'm not talking about that in terms of where my heart is about assuring that, you know, we citizens of the United States have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I'm talking about real basic what ought to be the most conservative of Republican economics, bringing money into our state for a purpose that saves us money in the long run and employs people in decent jobs in the shorter run.
Now, you would think. So last question I've got for you. What do we do? What do people do? I mean, is it enough to go to the town halls? Is it enough to make the phone calls? What's the marching order?
I think the marching order is all of that. We need to be making phone calls into our House of Representative members' offices and into Senator Toomey's office, in particular here in Pennsylvania, and to their counterparts from the other states that listen in on this show. At the same time, we need to do two things, and one is to demand that our members of Congress indeed come home and have town hall meetings. And I'm not talking about a telephone town hall meeting at 10 o'clock on a Monday morning. I'm talking about a real town hall meeting in an evening or over a weekend when real people, working people with families and responsibilities and mortgages to pay and car payments to make, can come and address their member of Congress and ask what this legislation is about and where Congress people stand, and encourage the media to be present. So one is that they have town hall meetings, and the other half of that is that when they do, when they acquiesce in that request, that those who are our employees, members of Congress, come to see their employers, we the people, that we go and we attend and we not be bashful, that we openly and vocally ask the questions, not in a confrontational way, but get the information and ask where they stand, and perpetually ask where they stand in public, demanding that we get answers to why it is they want to help the multi-rich at the expense of the multitudes, why it is they want to embellish the income of the insurance industry while cutting out its risk, why they want to compromise the one thing that we know saves cost in the delivery of health insurance, and that is to have a broader and more expanded pool of participants, particularly people who are younger and don't use the insurance as much, and people who are older and have primary access to Medicare, so that the price that any one of us has to pay is diminished or controlled. Look, the reason that car insurance is relatively affordable is because we require everybody to have it.
Everybody.
So everybody, not almost everybody, not the majority, but everybody who has a car must demonstrate existence of a policy in force to register that vehicle. And what that means is that when I have an accident, there is a pool of people who didn't have an accident that day, and collectively we're pooling our resources so that my car can get fixed and my injuries can be healed. That's the notion, that's the basic notion of what insurance is and how it's supposed to operate. These people pushing this Ryan Trump plan are saying that we're going to upend the foundation of the insurance market and say everybody should have insurance except those who don't. And if rich people have insurance, we're going to reward them by taking insurance access away from poor people by allowing it to become overwhelmingly expensive at the same time as we cut the money that's otherwise available for them to buy it.
There you go. Irwin, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Good to be here, Rick. Thank you.
Great talk with you. Our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
One of these days, we're going to wake up.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.